to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a show that is just chock full of hard-hitting topics this evening. I'm going to give you a very brief introduction to the program, and we are going to get right down to business. Welcome to the Political Cesspool, everyone. I'm your host, James Edwards. Saturday, May 22nd, 2010. That's the date, and we're here live with you, as always, on the Liberty News Radio Network, broadcasting from our flagship station, AM 1380, WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. The AM/FM affiliate stations of Liberty News Radio are carrying us also this evening, as is our live internet simulcast at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. Keith Alexander is with me this evening for the first hour, as he always is. And that being said, let's get right to it. The ADL has denounced Pat Buchanan again this week. I believe the only person alive who gets denounced more by Pat Buchanan than the ADL is yours truly. But what did Pat Buchanan say this week that prompted a nationwide press release denunciation from Abe Foxman and his cohort? Well, here first is what the ADL had to say. They called Pat Buchanan, and I quote, an anti-Semite who doesn't miss an opportunity to show his fangs in response to remarks he made about the Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan. Well, what did Pat Buchanan say that prompted such a dismissal? Here's what he wrote in his May 14th syndicated column. And I quote Pat, our good friend, when he writes, if Kagan is confirmed, Jews, who represent less than 2% of the United States population, will have 33% of the Supreme Court seats. That's it. That's what the ADL quoted as proof of Pat Buchanan's vitriolic anti-Semitism. Keith, Pat Buchanan points out that Jewish people own 33% of the Supreme Court, compared and contrasted with 2% of the population, and it gets calls for his firing, calls that he's a rabid racist anti-Semite. What do you make of it? I mean, they are really reaching on this one.
It shows you that Jewish power and influence is now almost complete in American public life, James. That's unfortunately the only conclusion I can draw from this. 2% of the population, which is what Jews represent in America, should not qualify that group for any representation on the Supreme Court. Blacks have 13%. Hispanics have 14%. They're both represented. And a representative seat based on the numbers, which is what the affirmative action proponents always throw up to the white majority of America, if you go by that proportionality, there are 9 members of the Supreme Court, so consequently, you would have to have 11% of the population to be owed a seat, according to affirmative action calculus, on the U.S. Supreme Court. He points out also, conversely, that white Protestants, the founding stock of America, white Protestants were the people who were the founding fathers of this nation and also founded the nation. They are still 51% of the population, so based on affirmative action calculus, white Protestants should have 5 of the seats on the Supreme Court.
They don't have any.
They now have 0. Pat Buchanan pointed that out, and things have changed so drastically since the Brown versus Board of Education decision in 1954 when there was 1 Jew on the Supreme Court, that now Abe Foxman is trying to, nail down the lid on the coffin of white Protestant domination in America. We're toast. We're history. That's what Abe Foxman is telling us. And quite frankly, no one dares have the courage to point out this emperor's new clothes situation except Pat Buchanan among mainstream media commentators. It's like, the emperor's new clothes, you're saying, look, this is such an obvious development. You've got 2% of the population representing a full 1/3 of the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, this is the 2% of the population, which among whites is by far the most liberal segment of the demographics or the electorate of America. So consequently, it's very ominous for conservatives whenever Jews become Supreme Court justices, because there has never been a Jewish Supreme Court justice on the United States Supreme Court that was not a radical leftist, starting with Louis Brandeis back in 1916, then Benjamin Cardoza, then Felix Frankfurter, and on we go. In fact, as we pointed out last week, the prime mover to obtain the disastrous decision for America's white majority of Brown versus Board of Education was, you guessed it, the one Jewish member of the Supreme Court at the time, Felix Frankfurter. A lot of these Jewish intellectual commentators have tried to say that he was some model of judicial restraint. Last week we told you about the skullduggery and machinations that he orchestrated in order to get that decision. If he's a model of judicial restraint, who is a model of judicial activism, James?
Well, Keith, that's a great observation, and let me interject this while we're on the subject. Well, first of all, let me say this. You had such a great hour last week. I know you were pretty much unbridled in your commentary, and we devised the program to be played out as such. We got a lot of emails. Folks, if you missed Keith Alexander's analysis and commentary on the Brown versus Board of Education decision of 1954, revisit our archives and go back to the program last week. One of the best commentaries Keith has ever delivered on this show, and he delivers a great one every week. But while we're on the subject, Keith, any time members of the anti-Christian left levy attacks on people like me or Buchanan or whomever, there's always double standards and hypocrisies in play. The ADL is charging Buchanan with anti-Semitism because he points out Elena Kagan is Jewish. However, as the Council of Conservative Citizens has pointed out, many Jewish publications have been praising the appointment of Kagan in the wake of her nomination and have been boasting her Jewishness. However, the ADL, one of America's most well-funded extreme left-wing outfits, says it is unacceptable and anti-Semitic for anyone else to mention that she is Jewish. But I'd also want to point out that there is a timeline of the Jewish people who have served on the Supreme Court. This chart is from the virtual Jewish library. I wonder, Keith, if the Anti-Defamation League will denounce the Jewish virtual library as anti-Semitism unabated.
You know, there are two taboo words in the English language in America today. One is the famous N-word, but following close on its heel is the dreaded J-word. No one is supposed to recognize Jews as a separate group of people with separate interests and a separate political ideology except Jews. Jews are special. You know, we've been noticing how, for example, you are a neo-Nazi or a modern manifestation of Hitler if you talk about white Gentiles having any group interests politically in America today. However, Jews, like the famous Elliot Abrams, former Assistant Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan and Special Assistant to President George W. Bush, can get away with writing a book called Secularism and Jews in the 21st Century, something along that line. And what he said in that book was that Jews must marry other Jews and procreate exclusively with other Jews. Now, you know, that you talk about an incredible double standard, but Kagan, and this double standard manifests itself in so many ways, James, Kagan is singularly unqualified to sit on the Supreme Court. By her own admission, she has never tried a lawsuit in her career. She has never argued, until she became Solicitor General of the United States under the Obama administration, she never argued a case, an appellate case. She has never held a regular job. She's been a law clerk first for U.S. District Court Judge Abner Mikva, another good son of Israel, in New York, and then with Thurgood Marshall. And she is a product of the Upper West Side of Manhattan, which is a notorious Jewish liberal enclave in Manhattan, in New York, that has spawned other notables such as Andrew Goodman, the so-called civil rights martyr of the Mississippi burning story. In fact, one writer who wrote about this said that he actually taught the writer and Kagan's brother how to ride a bicycle up there. And he is, you know, of course, for many of us, Andrew Goodman doesn't represent a martyr. He represents a Budinsky from Blue State America coming down to Red State America to tell people how to live, how to think, and what their values ought to be. Now,
we'll continue pontificating upon some of our values when the Political Cesspool returns right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Well, thank you, Art Frith and Frankie Valli. You're listening to the Political Cesspool, that's for sure. And you can tell when you're listening to the Political Cesspool if you're tuned into a radio program that's going to give you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth without retreat, surrender, or apology. James Edwards and Keith Alexander back with you for this first hour that we're going to cover a lot of stories this first hour. Reverend Ted Pike, one of our favorite guests, will be with us in the second hour. And don't even get me started yet about what's in store for the third hour. It's going to be a great show from start to finish. Keith, we got a busy segment forthcoming upon us right now, but I want to allow you to make a couple of final closing thoughts about the issue we were addressing just a moment ago.
We were talking about Elena Kagan, the proposed nominee and almost assured shoe-in nominee to the Supreme Court. With her addition, we will have 3 Jews on the Supreme Court and 6 Catholics, one of whom is black, one of whom is Hispanic, one of whom is Italian, two of whom are Italian, and one of whom is, I don't know what Roberts is. He may be of English stock, who knows. But basically, no Protestants, no white Protestants in there. And this is unprecedented, the first time in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court that this has happened. Elena Kagan is particularly dangerous because she is a typical leftist Jewish person from the Upper West Side. She was basically like Andrew Goodman of the Mississippi burning story. A red diaper baby. Her parents were notable left-wing activists in the Upper West Side, which is pretty remarkable. That's like saying that your father was a town drunk and the town he lived in was New York. You know, as Rodney Dangerfield said one time, you know, if you're a leftist in the Upper West Side and notable as an extreme leftist, you're a sure enough extreme leftist, James.
Well, Keith, not only are they extreme leftists, I got some more extreme leftists coming from you from a red state, if you can believe it or not, Jackson, Mississippi. Folks, as we segue into this next story, let me tell you that most all of the stories that we bring to your attention on this radio program, we anchor them on our website with corroborating facts, links to the source articles that we reference on this program. This is one of the stories. You're going to want to go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And research for yourself, because it's just one of those things you're going to think I'm making it up. Let me set the table here, no pun intended. You're at a restaurant, and you walk in, and you see 2 tables. The first table consists of a white man and his wife. He works hard, obeys the law, takes his family to church every week, gives to charity. His wife is a stay-at-home mom who also volunteers several hours a week at the local hospital and humane society. It's their anniversary, so they've left the kids with the grandparents and are at the restaurant to celebrate. The second table is also comprised of 2 people. One is a white drug dealer who's been in and out of prison and is currently awaiting trial for beating up his girlfriend. His dining companion is a black pimp who spent several years in prison for armed robbery and is awaiting trial for his prostitution-related activities. They're meeting at the restaurant to make plans for beating up one of his hookers to prevent her from testifying against him. Now, if one of these 2 tables were to be charged more for their meal, who would you suggest that should be? Well, a bunch of restaurant owners in Jackson, Mississippi think the white couple should pay much more for their meal than the drug dealer and the pimp, because the drug dealer and pimp's dining table is diverse, while the married couple sits at an all-white table. This is the story coming from Jackson, Mississippi. Again, the link is on our website. Discount offered for racially diverse dining. 13 restaurants, and I'm reading directly from the news story now, around the metropolitan Jackson area are taking part in Mission Mississippi's 2-and-2 restaurant days on Tuesday and Thursday of this week. Those who eat at participating restaurants for lunch and or dinner will receive a 22% discount on their meal if they dine with someone of a different race. The list of these restaurants can be found at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And if you live in and around the Mississippi area, why don't you call these restaurant managers up and tell them you don't appreciate them meddling in very damaging social engineering schemes. Keith, your thoughts on this? I'll tell you, this is something else.
Well, you know, I thought that the Civil Rights Movement was all about equality of treatment between the races. Apparently, since 1954, we've gone from segregated all-white restaurants to restaurants where non-white people get a discount. Now, I think we ought to, again, mimic the tactics of the left. We ought to have some sit-ins at those restaurants. We ought to tell people, we're not going to put up with this. This just shows you how much the cultural center of gravity in America has gone to the left. It's relentlessly gone to the left ever since 1954 and the Brown decision. It used to be that the dominant, the counterculture of the 60s has now become the dominant culture of today, and the dominant culture of the 60s is now the dissident culture of today, to the extent that this doesn't get a peep in the national mainstream news. You're only going to hear about this at a place like the Political Cesspool, where we don't pull any punches. We call things as they are. And this is an outrage. This is, you know, I don't think when people bought into the Civil Rights Movement and decided they were going to accept these changes, they were accepting the idea that white people would now be the group with less rights than anyone else, James.
And, Keith, if the joys of diversity were so blatantly obvious, it seems as though people would be wanting to come to these restaurants and willing to pay more just to have the experience of a diverse dining table. But no, because it is so unnatural. They're having to offer, you know, almost half-off meals in order to get people to take to it. Anyway, folks, I'm
well,
not going to lie.
It's like they had back in the 60s, James. They had these take a Negro to lunch movements back in the business community. I guess this is the latest manifestation of that.
Apparently
it shows
so.
It didn't work the first time.
I'm not going to rattle off the list of the restaurants, but again, they are available on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. I'm all for equal justice for all, special privileges for none, but this is obviously a step too far, as most things are in this day and age. Now, going from that to this, this is another reason you got to go to our website, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't been to our website this week, we have been burning it up. The political cesspool is on fire lately. Even though I'm a little hoarse, still battling a cold that has been plaguing me for nearly a month now, I'm here and I'm excited. It might sound like I'm a little lethargic, but believe me, I'm burning up for you tonight here in the cesspool. And the blog has just been great. Got a lot of good topics, a lot of hard-hitting commentaries, and some good video. Ray Stevens, one of my favorite singers from the 60s, singer of Mississippi Squirrel Revival, Turn Your Radio On, Misty, what a beautiful song. He's come out with a new song, and it's called Come to the USA, and it's a parody mocking this country's stand on illegal immigration, not mocking the Arizona stand, but mocking the stand of the Obama administration, for instance, or the mainstream Republicans. It's a great video. That's on there, and so is this video. It's entitled Life in Memphis, and I'll never understand why Elvis moved out west. There's never a dull moment here in Memphis, and that's all thanks to diversity or forced integration. You got to watch the video to see what I mean. A local television station is doing a live interview with one of our county commissioners here in Memphis when an Obama supporter walks right up and accuses the honky of messing with him and then tells him to keep his bleeping mouth closed. He then comes back and gets right in the face of this elected official and demands $2 from him. The politician tells him he doesn't have it, so then the crackhead tells him he better have it tomorrow or I'm going to kick your blankety blank. Now, of course, there have been no charges filed against this black gentleman, even though he's been identified by name and it's been all over the news. Tens of thousands of people saw him on a live news broadcast threatening another man with bodily harm if he didn't fork over some money, which is assault and or extortion. But it's not a crime, apparently, for this person to threaten the White County Commissioner, because this Steve Mulroy, and that's the name of the county commissioner, he apparently deserves being abused and threatened by these sort of minorities. So keep, but you know, what makes it so sick, though, is that even though the in-demand obviously...
We'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, I told you in the last segment that despite my raspy voice, I am very excited about the program tonight. And apparently I was so excited that last segment, I missed my cue and ran right into the commercial break, talked over the announcer and everything else. So I apologize for that. But the issue we were bringing to your attention was confrontation that happened during a live television interview here in Memphis. An obviously disturbed, mentally ill Obama supporter comes up and accosts one of our county commissioners, calls him all sorts of names, demands money, and there is no charges filed whatsoever, no hate crime, no charges of terrorism, nothing. And then, Keith, you saw the video, too, and again, it's on our website tonight, thepoliticalcesspool.org. What did the county commissioner respond after being humiliated, literally humiliated, by this man during a live interview?
Well, for people that aren't familiar with Memphis politics, and I would assume that's most people that aren't in Memphis, Steve Mulroy is a famous white liberal. He is a Democrat. He's a law professor at the local law school. And, of course, he is also an example of what I would call castrated male syndrome or feminized male syndrome. He, of course, immediately said how sorry he felt for this guy and how bad it is and how he wished he could do this. And again, all that shows is that liberalism is at work. Radical feminism has worked its magic on Steve Mulroy and other people. I would imagine that Steve Mulroy's father or grandfather, if they'd been confronted with somebody like this aggressive panhandler in 1954, would have either decked him or at the very least had him arrested. But of course, we're all supposed to tolerate all of this antisocial behavior if it comes from a minority, and Steve Mulroy is a perfect example of how we're supposed to behave to this type of threat. Now, you know, this is a type of crime, aggressive panhandling. It's a crime in Memphis, but the police have to actually see it. This was actually recorded on a TV station. This guy had the chutzpah, as they say in the Upper West Side, to come in front of a camera and try to shake this guy down, curse him, and threaten him with physical bodily violence. And, of course, nothing happens. It's almost, like you said, a parallel between what they do in the hate crimes law arena. You know, whites can't be the victim of hate crimes. They can only be the perpetrators of hate crimes. Likewise, blacks and other minorities apparently can't be the perpetrators of aggressive panhandling in Memphis. You know, what a double standard, what a wild and crazy world we live in, Jay.
Well, if a white bum had gone up and done this to a black elected official, the white bum would be in a dungeon under the jail cell somewhere. But again, you know, folks, listen, you can't make this stuff up. You got to go watch this video. It's posted within some of the most recent entries on our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and the title of the entry is Living in Memphis or Life in Memphis. Life in Memphis isn't much better than life in the rest of the country, and if you think you're still living in a free country, then you're simply not paying attention. Freedom was outlawed a long time ago here in America with the passage of the so-called civil rights laws. A year ago, we commentated or provided commentary on a story out of Pennsylvania where a private swim club allowed to let a liberal group bring some inner-city kids to their pool for the day. When they got there, it turned out that they had brought far more kids than they had initially talked about, and many of them were unruly. So they told the group that they would have to leave and refunded their money. In a free country, that would have been the end of the story. A private business could decide who's allowed on their property and who isn't. And it wouldn't be anyone else's business. But because the swim club was owned and operated by European Americans, and the kids were black and brown, and they didn't have the freedom to ask them to leave for everyone's safety, a Jewish attorney promptly sued them in civil court for violating the quote-unquote civil rights of the kids. And then the Department of Justice sued them for violating the civil rights of the kids. And then the state of Pennsylvania Human Rights Board went after them, too. Well, an update to that story some year later, and I think we originally covered this, yes, last July on this radio program. Just this week, the club had to pay so much in legal bills defending their alleged freedoms that they went bankrupt. They had to sell the club at an auction the other day as part of the bankruptcy. And guess who the proud new owner is? A local synagogue, probably the one the attorney who sued them attends. Keith, what do you make of that story?
Well, you know, a lot of people, I'm sure Abe Foxman, first among them, would criticize you and us for commenting and noting that the lawyer who is representing the poor disenfranchised blacks in this lawsuit is Jewish. But I think, on the contrary, this is exactly what we need to do. We need to make people aware of Jewish power and influence and what side of the divide they're on. They are trying to transform America not so much to help blacks and Hispanics and other minorities, but to damage and bring down white Gentiles. This is a perfect example. Now, I don't have a lot of sympathy with this swim club. I think you and I have talked about that before. I see some ironic justice in the plight of the Huntington Valley Swim Club in Pennsylvania. This is what guilty white liberals get when they open their facilities to supposedly poor, downtrodden, oppressed minorities in a gesture of misplaced charity. What they get is colossal ingratitude. The lesson, don't let the camel's nose into your tent. If things like this happen more often, and they will happen more often, but people need to connect the dots, then maybe, just maybe, whites will once again develop a healthy sense of racial solidarity. Minorities never have any qualms about reserving their resources for the exclusive use of their own people. When is the last time you heard of a black organization reciprocating and offering their facilities gratis to a white group? Wake up and smell the coffee, everybody. This is exactly, it's what Winston Smith has said. He said that at any moment, in any day or night, there is some white group somewhere on the globe wringing their hands, worrying, raising money, giving their own money, trying to improve the plight of black or other non-white people in the world. He said, likewise, at the same time, there is never any non-white group wringing their hands worried about what good they can do to help white people or white children or white anything in the world. People need to wake up, and white people need to have the same, particularly white Gentiles, they need to have the same instinct of racial solidarity that every other group has, because quite frankly, if you don't, you have unilaterally disarmed in the culture war, and unilateral disarmament is never a good idea, James.
Well, how about this one, Keith? Speaking of disarming someone, in Arizona, the very same week that this incident in Pennsylvania went down, where they were sued to the point of extinction, selling the club at auction. In Arizona, you have a rancher, and this is, again, is a story that we've posted onto our website. You got a rancher who spots a gang of illegal aliens rampaging through his farm one evening. So he, you know, gets out there, gets his shotgun, drives out there, and holds them until the Border Patrol can come and arrest them. So normally, you know, you've got someone trespassing on your property. To be able to go out there and call the police on these people, you would think would be a pretty routine idea. Well, this is Martin Luther King's diversity wonderland we're living in now, so that's not what happened. So that wasn't an open and shut case. What's happening now is that these illegal aliens, and let me highlight the word illegal, meaning that they have no rights as a normal American citizen would, are suing the rancher for violation of, you guessed it, their civil rights. And what's despicable about that isn't that they would try it, but that a judge has actually agreed to hear the case. And I bet it won't turn out good for the American rancher. Keith?
Well, what's going to happen, it's going to depend on the makeup of the jury. If the jury has a critical mass of Hispanics on it, you're going to see a supreme act of jury nullification. They're going to find for their cohort against the honky, and he's going to wind up probably losing his ranch if something like that happens. Now, see, this is the problem with the jury system. All of this tort reform stuff that you hear about how we need to cut back the rights of juries to reach verdicts, is like the emperor's new clothes not being honestly portrayed to the American public. The runaway jury problem that is the impetus behind tort reform is caused by minorities serving on juries. Almost the only places that have runaway juries are counties, venues, where they draw the juries from that have a vast majority of minorities. Now, who knows what the jury pool looks like for this poor Arizona rancher? This is exactly the reason why Arizona had to go and try to get this law passed.
Keith, hold it right there. Hold it right there. I hear music. We'll be back with more right after this.
Political Cesspool guys, we'll be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
That's right on. I'm James Edwards. He's Keith Alexander, and we are just plowing through this first hour tonight. Don't forget, in the second hour, a little bit later on in the program, well, not too far from now, as it stands, things are going so quickly this evening. Reverend Ted Pike will be my guest once again. Eddie the Bombardier Miller will be co-hosting with me during tonight's third hour, as my co-hosts Winston Smith and Bill Rowland have the evening off. Now, we've given you Well, I guess, you know, it's not favorable news. It's news that's disconcerting to an extent. Pat Buchanan being attacked by the ADL. Jackson, Mississippi, charging the people who don't have a diverse table more for their meals than people who do. This pansy county commissioner in Memphis being accosted by a criminal and then saying, we haven't done enough to help this criminal have a better lot in life. Pennsylvania Swim Club is sued out of business for trying to practice private property rights. And we were just talking about this Arizona rancher who is facing a civil suit, for protecting his own property as well. But now, all that being said, we've got some good news. I got a roundup of good news. We're going to give it to you before the sand runs out of the hourglass this first hour. But before we get into the good news, Keith, you have one final fleeting comment on the Arizona rancher story.
Well, what the Arizona rancher story points out in bold type is the need for the law that Arizona passed that gives Arizonans and the Arizona government the right to enforce the immigration laws and the border control laws in that state, because the federal government is intentionally guilty of dereliction of duty, not only under Obama, it was likewise derelict in its duty under George Bush and the neocon Republicans that he represented, James.
Well, yeah, Keith. I mean, again, you're hitting the nail right on the head here. And these are all things that we're going to have to provide with a reckoning. So, you know, is it possible? Well, you know, despite all this that we've discussed, and despite the fact that you would have never imagined in America that a man would be facing losing his livelihood because illegal aliens, criminals,
losing his property, losing his ranch,
sue him for protecting his home. You would have thought that would have never been imaginable here in God's country, but now it is, and it's happening. But as I've been saying on the show for the past several weeks, I am more optimistic about the future now than I have been at any point during my career as a radio host, and that's a career that now spans 6 years. Is America waking up? Well, maybe, maybe not, but I do have a roundup of good news. I truly feel as though those who have subverted our government and our media, our universities and churches, might have finally awakened the sleeping giant that is the dispossessed European-American majority of this country. We all know, Keith, about the America First immigration law that has been passed in Arizona. And as a result of Arizona's vision and courage, many other states now stand ready to propose similar legislation in an attempt to start taking our country back. I remember when Arizona first came out with this law, they were the only one. Then there were five. Then there were 12. Now, 17 states are either have either gotten the ball rolling towards passing a law similar to Arizona's or are at least strongly considering it. That's nearly half the country that is preparing to address a very serious subject, and they have prepared to address it in about a month. This has all happened in a month. Since Arizona has passed it, 17 other states have come on the line in a month. That is a rapid turnaround. Now, that's not all, though. I have compiled a roundup of good news stories just after browsing the Internet for a few minutes one afternoon this week. Arizona, the good news from Arizona is just coming in all directions. Fresh from signing that law about immigration, they have also passed a couple of new laws. One, for instance, banned schools from teaching minority studies courses that advocate subversion of this country. And now they have signed a law, Governor Jan Brewer has, affirming that nothing in state law requires businesses to provide trained interpreters when a customer comes in demanding a language other than English. So that's three laws right there in a month in Arizona. Arizona really leading the way. As Carlton Huffman, Pat Buchanan's former executive assistant, has reported on this story, a diversity policy was tossed in North Carolina, in Raleigh. A school board voted on Tuesday night to end its diversity policy, meaning that Wake County School District will begin dividing the county into community school zones. And what does that mean? That means if you live in a white community, you were going to go to school with white students. If you live in a black community, you're going to go to school in whatever the makeup of your neighborhood, that's who you're going to go to school with. Imagine that. You're not
going back to neighborhood schools.
For no good reason. Tennessee is considering a copycat of Arizona's immigration law. They're one of the 17 states. Oklahoma says they are shooting for an Arizona plus immigration bill. They want to take the Arizona bill and make it even more strong. Some of the things that they're going to implement into it includes making it a felony for illegal immigrants to own a toy gun. I mean, this is just great. They are going to seize property.
Well, did you see something that's happening
using
here, James?
Using that property to aid and abet illegal aliens. For instance, if you get caught with a van load of illegal aliens that you're transporting to a job site, that van would be subject to seizure. The state of Oklahoma really getting serious about putting Oklahoma first and protecting their citizens from the danger of illegal immigration. But, Keith, we're also seemingly getting victories at the ballot box as well. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to you. Arlen Specter was voted out, one of the great traitors in the American government apparatus. Arlen Specter voted out after, 50 years in office? Rand Paul, the son of Ron Paul, has won. A very big upset for up there in Kentucky. And he has really set the liberals on fire for saying that he opposed some elements of the so-called Civil Rights Bill, the Civil Rights Act. He said that businesses ought not be forced to cater to customers that they don't want to cater to. And he held the line on it pretty strong. Then this week he kind of capitulated a little bit, kind of disappointed us. But I still think he has some redeeming qualities. You know the story there, Keith. He was on the Rachel Maddow show, the MSNBC's favorite militant lesbian. And apparently she feels as though she has the moral authority to speak down to Dr. Paul for saying that he believes in freedom, essentially. Keith, what did you make of all that?
Well, let me drop back and give a little bit of perspective to this whole thing. If you'll notice, there is a commonality between all of these locales, Arizona, Tennessee, North Carolina, Rand Paul's election in Kentucky, the new laws in Oklahoma and whatnot. What do all of those locales have in common, James? What they have in common is that they are part of red state America. What do all of these locales like Seattle, New York City, Columbus, Ohio, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, and all these other places that are boycotting Arizona about their passage of that law, what do they have in common? They're from blue state America. What we're seeing is basically this demarcation, this stark contrast between the values, mindset, and outlook of people in red state America versus the mindset, values, and outlook of people in blue state America. You know, it was William Faulkner who said, the past isn't dead, James. In fact, it's not even past. Our ancestors were right when they tried to secede from the Union. We are two nations. All of these events that we're talking about are more evidence of the fact that we should be two nations. The way you define a nation is a commonality of outlook, a commonality of racial stock, things like this. This is where the rubber meets the road, and quite frankly, this is why I think we're what we need to really consider what the future of this country is. Are we going to continue to let the blue state tail wag the red state dog? There is much more land in red state America than blue state America. But somehow, and I think one of the crucial elements of how this has been accomplished, blue state domination, is through Jewish power and influence. For the longest time, since Brown versus Education, we've been on the retreat. Maybe we're about to turn that around. Quite frankly, we don't want to be like blue state America. We think we're right and they're wrong. And if they don't like us, then let us out of this loveless marriage with blue state America. If you're going to continue to try to shove your values, your mindset, and your outlook down our throat, maybe it's time to call it a day. What do
you
think, Jane?
Regrettably, it's time to call it an hour. And my friend, as always, you have been sharp as a tack this evening in providing commentary with all the issues we addressed. And we addressed a lot of them. It was a real rapid-fire segment this first hour tonight. I hope the audience enjoyed it as much as I did bringing it to their attention. We've got a lot more, though, forthcoming this evening. Coming up in the second hour, we're going to talk more about immigration. Then we're going to shift gears and talk with Reverend Ted Pike about INDA. INDA. Do you know what INDA is? Well, he's going to tell you, and he's going to tell you what it's all about and why we need to defeat it in the second hour. Here's a little Ray Stevens. We talked about him earlier. We'll be back. More
okay.
Right after this.
1 hour down and two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
Harv leaped to his feet and said, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk. In the First Self-Righteous Church, in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula, it was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit and blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the 8th.